I'm Alexia Gordon, author of the award-winning Gethsemane Brown Mysteries, published by Henry Press, and the host of the Cozy Corner podcast, part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Every other week, I chat with an author who writes novels on the not-so-gritty end of the crime fiction spectrum. If you prefer mystery without hardcore sex and violence, join us in the Cozy Corner. Welcome.
I'm Alexia Gordon, author of the Gethsemane Brown Mysteries and host of the podcast. Joining me in the Cozy Corner today is John Gaspard, author of the Eli Marks Mysteries, to chat about the sixth novel in the series, The Zombie Ball. Welcome, John.
Good afternoon.
Let's start by hearing about your Eli Marks series. Tell us something about Eli and about The Zombie Ball.
Sure. There are six books in the series, and this is book number six. Eli Marks is a magician who lives and works in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. He does corporate events and trade shows and that sort of thing, just a workaday magician who on occasion gets put in situations where there are murders that he either solves or helps to solve. The sixth book is called The Zombie Ball, and it's sort of different in that although you don't need to read all six books in order, you can jump in anywhere that you want. There is a timeline from the first one through the fifth one where characters grow and things change. It's all explained in each book, but you don't have to read them in order. However, The Zombie Ball was designed for someone who wants to jump into the series and kind of stay in order. And so it takes place before the first book. It's a flashback book in which Eli recounts an event that took place at a thing called The Zombie Ball and some murders. And it sort of sets up everything that's going to come for the next five books.
And what made you decide to write a book that I guess you could call a prequel?
Yeah, a couple of reasons. One is that about 6 months ago, I got the rights back to the series. I've been working with a publisher on the first four books. And I got the rights back and was now able to actually market and promote them the way I wanted to, which I'd not been able to really do when you're working with a publisher. They kind of handle all that, or they have very strict guidelines on how those things go. Or they do want you to market and promote, but they don't give you the information you need to see how the results of your advertising. But now that they're all mine, I'm able to do that. And I wanted something that I could offer occasionally as a giveaway or as a free book, just to incite people to want to read the rest of the series. And the best way to do that was to do a book that took place before the timeline. But also, there's been a lot of things within the series that I wanted to kind of explain, tell you why they happened the way they happened, or how the relationships got the way they got, because we do sort of jump in the very first book, and that structure allowed me to go back about 4 or 5 years and explain why Eli's divorced, why he lives with his uncle, who's a world-class magician, why he has the relationship he has with his ex-wife and the relationship he now has with her new husband. And that's all been sort of set in the series, but this gave me a chance to see what it was like before all that happened.
And what inspired you to choose a magician as your protagonist?
Well, as it turned out, I had a lot of friends who were magicians. I'm not a magician myself, but I know a lot of performers, and within that subset, I know a lot of magicians. And they're very interesting people. They are very good with puzzles. They have a weird way of looking at things. And as I explored it more deeply, because I knew I wanted to do a series about, continuing series with a character, I realized that the world of magic and the names of the tricks provide great titles for books and also kind of great springboards for each of the mysteries. The first book is called The Ambitious Card, which is a very popular card trick. The second book is called The Bullet Catch, which is a very famous and sometimes deadly trick that is still done today. Penn and Teller do a very good version of it that is quite safe, but other people, I think about 13 people have died doing it. And then other tricks like The Miser's Dream or The Linking Rings or The Floating Light Bulb, they all just sound like good titles. And so it seemed like a good character to latch onto.
Now, you use the term magician in your books and in this conversation. I've also heard of entertainers who perform sleight of hand being referred to as illusionists. Is there a difference between the two?
There really isn't. In the world of magic, someone who does illusions generally refers to someone who does larger scale magic, something with a big box on stage or something that involves a lot more gear. That's an illusionist. And a magician can be an illusionist, or a magician can be a close-up artist, or a magician in some cases can be a mentalist. So it's just different subsets of it.
Okay. Now, the Zombie Ball opens with a vivid depiction of the behind-the-scenes world of a stage show. It talks about the prep work and the rehearsals, the controlled chaos of getting so many moving parts to come together. What kind of research did you do to make that side of the performing that most people don't see come to life?
Well, I was in the meetings and events business for about 30 years. And so I've been backstage at all kinds of events, big sales meetings, big product launches, big charity events. And so I'm pretty well versed in what it takes to get a show like that up and running, and the sorts of personalities that can clash during what can be a very stressful time as you're trying to pull off a live show that in many cases doesn't have any real sort of rehearsal. It's just you move into a hotel ballroom, you set up all your gear. If you're lucky, you can do a quick tech run through to make sure everything's happening, and then all of a sudden the audience is there and you're doing your show. And I thought that was a nice venue to put Eli in, because I've worked with a number of my friends who are magicians. I worked with them in corporate settings, and I know what they're able to bring to that and the sorts of pressures that are on them to perform in that setting.
Now, as you mentioned, you have several friends who are magicians, so I'm assuming that they helped you get some of the magic details in the series, right? But did you also take magic lessons yourself?
I did. I for the first book, which is called The Ambitious Card, that's a card trick where a card that is selected by one of the audience members is put back in the deck and keeps popping up to the top of the deck. It recurs over and over and over. And in that book, that card, that signed card, keeps ending up on different corpses in the book, which is why Eli is involved with it. So I thought I should learn how to at least do that trick. And so I found a local magician who's actually nationally known here in Minneapolis, but she's been on Penn and Teller, and she's done Magic Castle. Her name's Suzanne. And I had probably 10 lessons with her, in which I learned not only how to do that trick, but also it gave me some really good background on sort of the day-to-day life of what does a magician do to keep their business running.
And did you learn any other tricks?
Well, my plan was I was going to learn each trick, each title for each book. But then the second book turned out to be the bullet catch. And I sort of abandoned that because it's far too dangerous. And I'm not really a performer. So to keep learning tricks, I really had no venue in which to get better at it. So there is one card trick that I can do that I've done at book events, which is sort of fun because it ties into the ambitious card. And I've been very lucky because I know a bunch of magicians, and since starting this series and learning with Suzanne, she and I have started to produce a monthly magic show here in the Twin Cities. And so she's brought in a lot of her magic friends. And so I've been able to do that trick for some of the top magicians in the world who've been able to go, "Now, hey, John, that's great, but why don't you do this? Or at this point, why don't you do that?" So I'm getting really great lessons from some of the best people.
And I'm assuming there are no actual murders at your monthly magic shows.
Not yet.
Oh, hopefully not ever.
I don't know if it helps getting people in the door.
There you go. Speaking of magic tricks, which one's your favorite?
Which one is my favorite magic trick? That's a very hard question. I don't have a particularly favorite trick. Once you know how things are done, you kind of tend to look at them slightly differently. And what you find is that there's two things going on in a magic trick. One is the actual illusion itself, whatever they're doing that's fooling you as a viewer. But the other thing, which is more important, is the way in which they're doing it, the personality they're bringing to it. And that's what I find interesting is it's like the way a bands would cover a song. And you go, "I like that cover. I like the way they did that. But this other band covered it and I didn't like it." And you'll find that with magicians, where someone will have an approach to a very simple trick. And because of the personality they bring to it, that's what makes it more interesting. Because once you know how it's done, It can be less interesting unless the performer is bringing something special to it. And I've been really lucky in that I've gotten to know some of the, you know, they're well-known names in the magic community, like Eugene Berger or Max Maven or John Carney. The average person doesn't know them, but in the magic world, you go, oh, wow, you hung out with Max Maven? And yeah, I spent a weekend with Max Maven. And that's really fun. That's the best part is watching people who are really, really good at something, showing you their performance that is unique and captivating. I can't really name a particular trick, but I can say I've been able to experience great magic from some of the best magicians in the world.
Do you have a favorite magician or anyone in particular you'd recommend that people rush out and buy tickets to see in town?
Well, if your listeners live in Los Angeles area, if you can get a ticket to the Magic Castle, you're going to see great magicians there. If you live in Chicago, there's a place called the Magic Lounge, which just opened up, which is a continuing roster of great magicians. And if you want to enjoy magic, one of the best ways to see it and enjoy it is watch Penn & Teller's show, Penn & Teller Fool Us, because they have the best magicians in the world. And they treat them very respectfully, and they don't cut up their act. You get to see exactly what they're doing. That's really one of the best ways to see magic is with Penn & Teller. In fact, although I'm not a magician, I have sort of fooled Teller, because on the show, a magician performs for the two of them, and then they chat, and then Penn, who does all the talking, explains in kind of code how the trick was done, and they decide whether or not they were fooled or not. But I, the fourth book in the series, Linking Rings, used a quote at the beginning from Teller, and I have a friend who's a friend of his, so I emailed the friend, and the email went to Teller saying, can I use this quote? And he emailed back and said, by all means, go right ahead. And when the book was published, I sent it to his offices thinking nothing would ever happen with that. And a couple weeks later, got an email from him that said, John, I was in the right mood for a detective story and picked up Linking Rings. And I thought the killer was X, but it turned out to be Y. I really enjoyed the way you handled magic in the book, regardless of Teller. And I thought, wow, I fooled Teller.
Wow.
Which is kind of exciting.
And speaking of a mystery fooling a magician, Hallie Efron wrote a guide to writing mysteries where she compared crafting a successful mystery to being a successful magician. Have you seen any parallels between doing sleight of hand and convincing the audience that you really did magic and crafting
a mystery? Yes. There's a saying about magicians that the best magician looks like a duck floating in the water, where you don't see anything happening at all. But if you saw under the water, you'd see that the feet are flapping like crazy. And the best magic is stuff you never see, and you have no idea that it happened. And crafting a mystery is like that, where you have to put in all the clues and all the red herrings, and it does have to tie together. And that's tricky, because you want to show them enough that if they look back on it, they can go, oh, yes, of course, that was the answer. And you also don't want to show too much so they don't jump ahead and get ahead of you. And like with magic, it's a very subtle balance of how much do you show and how much do you hide. But I did recently just get an email from someone who'd read The Zombie Ball, and they commented on, they said, you know, when I got to the end, I was surprised at who the killer was, and then thought back and went, oh, yes, every single clue was there. I just didn't realize it was a clue at the time. And that means I pulled off a pretty good magic trick doing it that way.
And what's next for your literary magician, Eli Marks?
Well, I'm researching the next book in the series, which will be book number 7, trying to figure out exactly what's happening to Eli there. While I do that, I have a second series I'm working on called the Como Lake Players Mysteries, which I write under the pen name of Bobby Raymond. And there's first book one of that is out, and we're doing the audiobook now. And I'm just finishing up the second book in that. And that takes place in a community theater in St. Paul and has nothing to do with magic. It has to do with community theater, which I also have a background in.
But again, putting on a successful show involves not letting the audience see all of the stuff that's going on behind the scenes.
Exactly. And there's the same sorts of tension and pressures. And then you throw a murder in there and all of a sudden it gets pretty interesting.
And you've also generously offered my podcast listeners a free short story in either ebook or audio format. Can you tell us what they'll be getting?
Yes. It's a short story called The Invisible Assistant. And it is just a quick case that Eli got involved with his ex-wife, who is an assistant DA in Minneapolis, and her husband is a homicide detective. And they come to Eli with a puzzle where they found two bodies, and it appears to be a murder-suicide. But once you hear the facts in the case, you realize that there's no way that that person would have ever killed someone or killed themselves. And he has to go into this locked room and figure out how it happened.
And listeners will be able to find the links to those in the show notes for this episode.
Yes, I steer them toward the audiobook only because it's fairly short, and then they get to hear my narrator, Jim Cunningham, who's a local talent here in the Twin Cities, who's narrated all the books and who does such a terrific job that I really think I prefer listening to them than to reading them. I think he just brings it so much alive.
And where can readers find your books?
They are available on Amazon.com in Kindle or paperback or hardcover or audiobook.
And where can they find more about you?
They can go to the John Gaspard author page on Facebook, or they can go to EliMarksMysteries.com. That's EliMysteries.com. Eli Marks Mysteries. Marks is MARKS. Or just hang out on the Facebook page. That works too.
And if they happen to be in the you said it's Minneapolis area, where can they get a ticket to your magic show?
While they're on Facebook, just go to Sunday Night Magic, which is our Facebook page for that. We do between 6 and 9 shows a year. We do them at a local theater that is kind enough to give us their stage and their auditorium on the occasional Sunday night. We haven't laid out this year's schedule yet, but I think there'll be 3 shows this spring and 3 shows in the fall.
I'm sorry.
That's Sunday Night Magic on Facebook.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me in the Cozy Corner today, John.
It's been fun. Thank you.
This has been your host, Alexia Gordon, author of the Gethsemane Brown Mysteries. Thank you, listeners, for joining my guest, John Gaspard, author of the Eli Marks Mysteries, and me in the Cozy Corner today. Until next time, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Cozy Corner podcast, part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I'm Alexia Gordon, author of the Gethsemane Brown Mysteries and the host of the podcast. Tune in next time as I chat with another author writing on the lighter side of crime. Until then, goodbye.